You're listening to Talking Heads. Thanks for sharing a part of your afternoon with us today. This hour on the programme, we're continuing our coverage of the build-up to this year's general election, which is brought to you by PDMS. And we're joined in the studio now by Leonard Singer, who's making a bid for one of the seats in Ramsey in September. Good afternoon, Leonard, and welcome to Talking Heads.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone.
It's a while since we spoke in any detail, but of course, most of the people that I'm talking to haven't been members of the House of Keys before. You have. 2003, was it?
No, 1996 to 2003. I was in the House of Keys. I was elected to 1996,
yes.
Re-elected in 2001.
Yeah, and then you went on to be an MLC as well.
I did, yes.
You've got lots of experience of Manx politics.
Yes, I've got lots of experience of Manx politics because also I was a member of the Ramsey Town Commissioners from 1991 to 96 before I was elected to the Keys. And then since 2008 to the present time, I'm also a member of the local authority now.
Yes. OK, what makes you want to go back into the House of Keys? Because, like you've said, you had two terms at it. You've been an MLC, you've been a member of various departments. What makes you want to get back into it?
Well, I've lived in Ramsey now for 20 years. And I'm the only candidate, unless any others come forward, that actually lives in Ramsey, works in Ramsey, pays rates in Ramsey. I put three boys through the local schools. In fact, I've still got my youngest is still at Ramsey Grammar School. And being there all the time, I just look at Ramsey as it is now, and the town has been let down. I believe there's been nobody speaking up in Tynwald for the town. The town's become very shabby. There's been no positive investment actually in the centre, and nobody to speak up for the people. A lot of people actually still come to me, and I'm very happy to deal with the problems. But when I have raised matters, and there's quite a few matters of great concern within the town, I've actually never had any support from our MHKs.
But the general feeling is that the next government that the Isle of Man has is going to have to look at all the serious national issues that are facing us. Surely we don't want MHKs who are just going to be bothered about parish pump politics.
No, absolutely, I agree. Stuart, I was in the Department of Trade and Industry and I was in charge of economic development, and I used to travel all around the world encouraging companies to come and invest in the Isle of Man. So I know what all that's about, and I think I was successful at that.
Yeah.
But it's fine doing that, and you've got to promote the island, defend the island, but you've never got to forget the people who put you there in the first place. And I believe that that's what's happened. You know, you can't say, well, national items come first, and I'll forget the local people, because whilst government still has responsibilities within the town, then in the MHK, whatever their other jobs are, they've still got to look after the town. Now, there are certain responsibilities that government have, for example, the roads and the planning. I believe that these sort of items should be actually given back to the local authority. I think they could be much more efficient doing these jobs. Well, I'm sure they would be much more efficient doing these jobs. The other thing that I would want to do, if elected, is to make sure that I had excellent contact with the local authority, that I met them on a regular basis. I think that working together as the MHK and the local authority can only be advantage to the town. And I'm afraid that sort of contact has not happened during the last 5 years.
You obviously feel it's important for a Ramsey MHK to live in Ramsey. And apologies to everybody for the car alarm we can hear in the background. There's nothing I can do about it.
It's not my car, so
no.
I think by being in the town and working in the town, people know where I am. They know they can actually come and knock on my door whenever they want, which they do, or ring me up and I can be around to see them. And I know by talking to people in the town, they tell me what they feel. It's no good living out of the town when you don't see the people and you only come into the town occasionally.
Well, the current MHKs don't live far out of the town, do they?
But you've got to actually be in the town. You know, if you're in the town when you're working, people can see you all day, they know where you are.
Right. Well, tell us a little bit more about your background. We've talked about your political background, but tell us a bit more about your general background. I think you're a pharmacist, aren't you, by trade?
Pharmacist. I've been a pharmacist for probably too long now. And I come originally from Manchester. You will have heard of that, Stuart.
Nothing wrong with that.
And I had a pharmacy in South Manchester for 20 years. I was also a member of Stockport Council during the major reorganisation of local government there. So Stockport was a town of 300,000 people. So it was a major authority. It was obviously very political. And I was in charge of Manchester Airport Consultative Committee. I was chairman during the major expansion of the airport. And it was my efforts fighting Manchester City Council that managed to get soundproofing grants for people who actually lived around the airport. Because people used to say, well, why, they know there's an airport there, why should they get soundproofing grants? But the fact was, some of them were council houses, people had no choice where they lived. And the other thing was that when they moved there, there maybe were 500,000 people using the airport, and that expanded to 10 million. So I was very pleased to be able to do that. I also used to travel on behalf of the council down to London, to the Association of Metropolitan Authorities, representing the authority. I was vice chairman of the health committee. I was on various other committees. So. And also, one of the things I'm very proud of is that the Alexandra Hospital, of which many people know in Cheadle and have used from the Isle of Man, was there because of my efforts. And that's one of my... I'm quite proud of that. So I was on the council there for 13 years.
You were... I think one of your last government positions was that you were a member of the DTI, and I think you were responsible for the film industry in the island, weren't you, at one stage?
I was chairman of the Film Commission.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that's been up for a lot of debate recently. Where do you stand on that? Do you think that the film industry has done the Isle of Man any favours, or has it cost us an arm and a leg?
I don't think it's cost us an arm and a leg. I think there are a lot of stories going around which aren't true, but I can tell you, when I was chairman of the Film Commission, we used to meet under the umbrella of the Economic Development Committee at least a month, and 1 month. Sometimes it was every 2 weeks. And at that time, all the films and any negotiations were brought to the notice of the committee.
Yeah.
And so we knew exactly what was going on. Just before the last election, they decided that they didn't want a film commission anymore, and they didn't want a chairman of the film commission. They were going to form this Cinema NX.
Yes.
And that then took it totally out of the Department of Trade and Industry as such, knowing what was going on. Because when they did come, they would tell us what was happening, we could ask the questions, we could maybe give directions, we knew what was going... As I say, we knew what was going on. That then they decided, the Council of Ministers must have decided, because there was no film commission anymore.
Well, a lot of people have said over the last few years that government should be concentrating on governing the country and not running businesses like the film industry, so you can see why that may be happened.
No, but it was public money, and it also involved the public, in that a lot of people were employed, as has been said, doing jobs that were connected with the film industry. It did produce at that time a lot of employment. Generally, the film industry has gone... really have been reduced as far as volume's concerned because of financial circumstances. But it quite amused me to say, oh, well, we nearly got this film. You know, nearly is not good enough.
And but you think that on balance it's made us money, given the investment?
No, it's apparent, no. I think it's lost us money. People have made money working in the film industry, but I don't think we've not made any great profits from it.
Right. Okie dokie. What do you think about the current government? Because obviously you've not been a part of this latest government. What do you think about it? Do you agree with David Cannon that it's been the worst in living memory, or do you think that they've done a reasonably good job given the circumstances?
I think it's been a poor government. We had the Any Questions last night at Ramsey, and listening to our MHKs, you would have thought that this was the best government we've had. We had the best leader, that everything they'd done was right, that they were on the right track. I mean, to me, that was living in Fantasy Island. I don't think that's right. I think the government has been very weak. I don't think there's been any forward planning. They've wasted absolute millions on various items. In fact, I went over I saw the Gorn roundabout for the first time last week, and it's just absolutely ridiculous, the size of it. And I watched, and people weren't going round it, they were going over it. There's been no control on government expenditure. I mean, hospital waiting lists, they've increased up to 24 months. We've reduced the number of primary school teachers, and yet the business school's allowed to overspend by a third of £1 million. The government's rolled over on the reciprocal agreement, and then they decided to rewrite history and claim that they were the ones who had it restored. The civil servants' pensions have not been, the final salary pensions has not been tackled, and they were warned in 2006 that this was going to happen, and we were told last night, well, we only had 5 years, and that's why it's not been sorted out. Well, I'm afraid that's not right.
But an awful lot of these problems have started when you were a member of the government, so it's a bit...
No, I was not a member of the government. I was a member of Parliament. I was not a member of the Council of Ministers. The problem with the Council...
Not the Council of Ministers, but you're a political member of various departments, weren't you?
It didn't directly involve things like pensions, but the fact is that this Council of Ministers, this last Council of Ministers, has been so powerful, I think they've only lost one vote in 5 years, that they've actually distanced themselves from the people, and they don't actually have to consult anybody. They just make the decisions. They don't have to consult the MHKs. They don't have to consult people. And I think one of the problems is that the people should know what is going on, because the Council of Ministers has got to trust the people if the people are going to trust the Council of Ministers.
So you think things like the Freedom of Information Act is important?
Absolutely. I mean, I've always supported that. And Mr. Brown and the Council of Ministers have let us this island down very, very badly to say we're going to have a Freedom of Information Act, and to come forward at the end of the term, when they couldn't possibly put anything through, and then say, well, we don't really want to put it through because it's going to cost us money, when you'd look round and think of the millions of pounds that this government has wasted. That, I think, that was a diabolical admission by Mr. Brown of failure.
But as a two-term MHK and as a single-term MLC, have you not been in a position to actually influence government decisions on things like that in the past and not done it?
No, I've heard one of the things that I always did, I was always prepared to stand on toes. They didn't like me standing on toes. They don't like you opening your mouth, asking the questions. I mean, we only had Mr. Bell the other day turning around and saying that when you ask questions, you were damaging our general business with the rest of the world. Well, that's a total nonsense, because MHKs are elected to ask the questions if they don't get the answers. I mean, that's their job. And you know, it can't be one-sided.
Do we not need a strong government, though, who take control of things like this? Because, you know, if we're going to consult the public about every single thing, it's almost like we're going to have a weekly referendum to decide on government policy. Shouldn't the Council of Ministers decide what we're going to do over the next 5 years and then stick to it?
Well, they've not just... They've got to make decisions, but they're not actually talking to us, the public. We don't know what's happening, and when it comes out... And then the other thing that I would say is that you're getting a lot of mistakes made. I mean, let's look at the £120 million that was the Manx Electric Authority. You know, there were three ministers involved in that, and nobody ever even apologised to the public about it. It was an admission of incompetent management and incompetent political leadership.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Talking to Leonard Singer, who's standing for one of the seats in Ramsey in September. And again, apologies for the fact that somebody's got a car alarm going off just outside the window. Not much I can do apart from shut the windows, and it's fairly warm in here already, so I'd rather not do that, if you don't mind. So, Leonard Singer, you're standing again. You've served in government in the past. You've decided that you're going to have a go at it. Do you think that you can add anything to the next government of the Isle of Man?
I do, Stuart. I think we've been talking the first section here of what is wrong with the government. I certainly think we should talk about, you know, well, how I see things. Mm. And I do think that I have got the vision. Funny, we were talking earlier on, the earlier subject, about Douglas Promenade. My first job in government was in the Department of Transport, in charge of highways. And about 12 or 13 years ago, with a gentleman called Michael Hicks, I produced a plan which was going to refurbish Douglas Promenade, but it was also going to go a lot further than that, in that it was going to bring the MER from Ramsey, move it onto the promenade, it would go round to the station and swap onto the steam train line, go down to the south, go to the airport. And we actually had identified suitable rolling stock in Ghent that would have happened that would have been useful.
Yeah.
And if the line had been upgraded, I went with that report to Mr. Gelling, who was then Chief Minister, and that's as far as it went. You know, so I saw that could happen now.
And why was that? Why didn't it go any further?
You have to ask Mr. Gelling that.
But could you not raise it in Tynwald, for example, and ask the question there, why it didn't progress?
Well, I would have expected at that time Mr. Gelling, just to ask a question. Yes, I suppose I could have asked a question. But the fact is, I went with the actual report and explained it to him. And whether he took it to the council ministers or not, I don't know. But there's other things that I've done. For example, people still remember the fact that I found the money at that time within Department of Transport to put the cat's eyes on the mountain. There were never any cat's eyes on the mountain.
Yeah.
People still say to me, you know, they remember this sort of thing. But I think I do have the vision. But what I want to see is, first, certain things you've got to look after. You've got to look after people, first of all, the health service and education. So we've got to look at not necessarily ring-fencing the money, but you've got to be getting the best service you can through education for the young people, both academic and non-academic. We've got to have a first-class health service. We've got to now work very strenuously to bring new high-quality businesses to the island.
How are we going to do that? Everybody's saying that we need to bring more business to the Isle of Man. What USPs have we got that would encourage any business to relocate here?
We've got to go out and face-to-face talk to people.
Jollies for
politicians. No, absolutely. I mean, I used to go to, I went to America, I went to Canada. There was no jolly, there were absolutely no jollies. We didn't stay in expensive hotels, traveled normal class on the aeroplanes. We had meeting after meeting, actually going to talk to people. There were absolutely no jollies, but I think it was successful because with the e-business, and other things like some of the light engineering, etc., bringing people back to the island. We've got to identify other areas of the world. I think of Africa, which has got a lot of natural resources. South America, the Far East, all these places.
But do you not think we've got an awful lot of bright people, certainly in the civil service, if not in government, who are doing that already? I mean, we've got the aircraft registry now, the super yachts, we've got all kinds of things like that. We've got, I know that Donald Gelling had got lots of contacts in the Middle East that he was trying to get business out of. He was over there a good few times, wasn't he? Do you not think that people are doing that already? I think what I'm getting to is to say, from the outside, everybody seems to have the answer to what the government needs, but is it that easy to solve the problems of the Isle of Man?
With the VAT black hole that we've got now, and again, that's something I can't understand, when Mrs. Crane says we're losing £200 million, we've got a good deal, and we're also told by Mr. Bell that this loss of money opens up new opportunities. I don't quite equate those two things.
Well, that's being positive rather than running around with your hands up.
I'm not quite sure how it opens just by losing it. But, no, I think that we've got to seek this business. We're not going to find it on the island, but we've also got to face up to the fact that we're not suddenly going to find companies coming across and bringing in enough money, and we're going to produce enough money to replace this VAT. There are going to be very hard times, and I think people have got to make decisions and people have got to work together.
But you think we can bring new business in to make up some of the shortfall?
I do. I think we can identify new areas within the world where we can bring business in.
Why would they come to the Isle of Man, though? Why would somebody from Africa want to come to the Isle of Man to do business?
Because, well, first of all, we have certain incentives here for them, but also the Isle of Man now is really basically the centre of Europe. If some companies from these far-off places want to deal with Europe, this is an ideal place. They can't deal with Europe very well from so far away.
Africa, for example, they'd probably be able to fly to Heathrow cheaper than they'd be able to get from Heathrow to the Isle of Man.
I don't think the matter of maybe £100 is particularly relevant, of the extra flight.
But the other thing is
we can give them support here on the Isle of Man. Because we are small, and this is experience I had, because we are small, somebody can come across here from Africa or wherever, and they can walk into the department. You can take them to see the minister, you can take them to see the chief minister, whereas that's an impossible thing to do in the United Kingdom, where you're going through loads and loads and loads of layers of civil servants.
I was involved in an aviation conference a couple of weeks ago at the Villa Marina, where we got lots of people from all over the world to come and talk to us about aviation in the Isle of Man. And that was a point that we made very strongly. Mm. The fact is that this is one of the few countries in the world where the minister's phone number and address is in the phone book.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's a good thing for the Isle of Man. The other thing, of course, is that because we're small, if you take the analogy of being a small ship or a large ship. We've used this before, that in a small ship you can change direction very quickly. Yeah. We've always been good on the island to adapt.
Wouldn't you think, though, that all these companies that could maybe come to the Isle of Man, bring business here, people in Africa or the Middle East or whatever, these are all companies who would know anyway where the low tax jurisdictions are. So isn't that message already out there?
No, there's nothing like talking face-to-face. When I used to go to the States, we went to talk face-to-face to the people, the movers and shakers who could make the decisions.
But did any of that do any good?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, you've only got to look at the e-gaming industry. We used to go to the exhibitions, particularly in Canada, where all the top people were, and they were very, very interested in the Isle of Man.
All right, you make a big play in your manifesto about not being a yes man in previous administrations. Doesn't that also mean, though, that you're not a team player and that you couldn't really influence an awful lot if you were re-elected?
Keeping your mouth shut doesn't make you a team player. It might get you a promotion, which it has done, but I think you've got to ask the questions. You've got a responsibility to the people who voted you in the first place. You've got that responsibility to look after them and sort their problems out. But I must say, within the department, and I was in the highways, I was in charge of fisheries, and one of my responsibilities there was to talk to the fishermen, because the relationship with the department at that time was terrible, and I managed to heal a lot of that. The chief minister asked me, because there was a problem with the Department of Trade and Industry and Department of Home Affairs on the e-business, where one was a promoter and one was was looking after the regulations. He asked the chief minister, Mr. Gelling, actually asked me to go to be in both departments so I could bring the two together. And I think I did that successfully. So, yes, I am a team player.
But people might say, well, highways, we've got the worst roads in Western Europe, probably. Fisheries, we've not got much of a fisheries industry anymore. Film industry, you were involved in as chairman of the Film Commission. You know, that's cost us a chunk of money that we're not going to get back. So is it a great CV, really?
Individually, it is, because in the highways, there are lots of things that I did. For example, I adjusted the money that we had. I put money out to the private sector, who could do the smaller jobs, so that the department could do the larger jobs. That was very successful.
Are you allied to any of the political groups in the Isle of Man, or are you a pure independent?
Independent.
Completely?
Completely, yes.
And, I mean, do you attend meetings of the PAG, and have you spoken to Liberal Vanin people to see what their ideas are and if there's any credibility to them?
I'm not sure about the Liberal Vanin party. They seem to be in continuing disarray, with people joining, people leaving. I don't think they have any particular power at the moment. I don't think they know themselves, really, in which direction they're going.
If you are elected in September, what do you think you can bring to government?
I think I can bring experience. I think I can. I've got foresight, I've got vision, I've got dedication, and I also will look after the people of Ramsey. Ramsey's still got to be your priority as an elected member, to look after those people. And also, I must say, we haven't talked about it, but I'm still chairman of the League of Friends of the Hospital, and Ramsey Cottage Hospital, I'm very proud of the things that we've done over the last few years in making that hospital, we've actually given £750,000 to the hospital, and we intend to spend a lot more. We've actually made it now a centre of excellence, and it's not just people from the north, but we get people from Douglas coming up for treatment as well.
Well, I seem to remember at the last election, that was one of your sort of platforms, really, of your campaign, wasn't it, about the threat to Ramsey Cottage Hospital. So what you're saying is that those fears were unfounded.
No, you're twisting that now. You know quite well that it was a taking away of the 24-hour service from the hospital. And you're also probably fully aware that at the election, both the MHKs, who were elected, and Mr. Tia, who became health minister, said they would support the 24-hour service. Well, we never heard another word after that, and that's when they had money. No, 5 years have gone past now, and I have to accept that we're not going to get a 24-hour service back at the hospital, but we are going to continue to support this hospital. We're looking to buy a new patient transfer ambulance. We're looking to do out the wound clinic, which is one of the best in Europe, actually, a wound clinic, but needs new facilities. So we're looking to spend that money. And we are always very, very grateful to the people of Ramsey for the support and the money they give to the hospital.
We're out of time, but Leonard Singer, why should the people of Ramsey vote for you in September?
Because, as in the past, I will fight for the town. I will obviously fight for the island as well, but you will know that you can trust me. And I want to keep that bond of trust that we've had in the past, and they know that I'm available wherever and whenever to them.
Leonard Singer, thanks very much for joining us today. Lovely to talk to you. No doubt we'll speak again before September.